This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 910, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you.
Baby, say you're traveling on the one after 909. Move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I said move over once, move over twice. Baby, don't you be cold as ice. Yeah, you're traveling on the one after 909. Beg you not to go down on my bended knee.
Hey, I'm Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Clear skies, clean sailing.
No snow, no rain, no...
There was a blizzard, nothing. And then a couple days later, there was rain, and then there was no more snow. So that's where we're at now.
So now you're just flooding? You have to take a boat everywhere?
No, we're good. We're on the hill. It's all fine. Ski season has been a problem, but that is such a snotty old...
It's best to just forget about ski season. It happened in the past. It's something you can tell your grandkids about.
It's my son's favorite thing.
I know, but he needs to find a new one. Maybe sunbathing.
Maybe he should try some sort of global climate engineering.
Beach volleyball.
Yeah. We're not a beach volleyball people. We're short-legged just to begin with. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 910, which indicates to you that there have been 909 before this. One of these days, we're going to get this whole process down. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best. That is the Pick of the Week. We read many comics. They come out, and then one of us has the job. They say, you know, that's the one. This is the It Book of the Week. We should change the title to a slightly different one. The It Book of the Week.
It Book.
The It Book.
Mm-hmm.
That is terrible for SEO. We will talk about that comic book. We will talk about other books from the week and often how they relate to the pick of the week. Was it close? Was it not close? This could have been pick of the week. Nothing was close. Or the very common, I don't know, I had to pick something. There might be listener mail. We try to have a good time. We try to be entertaining. We try not to rock the boat, I'd say. But, you know, maybe there will be rocking. Who can say? There will be spoilers. We will talk about what happens in those books. So if you haven't read them, that is on you. Connor, you had the pick. And might I say, did not see this coming. I'm shocked.
Action Comics, 1061 from Jason Aaron, John Timms, Rex Locus, and Dave Sharp. Although there isn't a credits page, at least in my digital copy. I had to look that up on the internet. Yes. Any longtime listener of this show should be shocked because there are very few comic book characters that I hate, and one of them is Bizarro. However, I think what we're seeing here is a little bit of a rejuvenated Jason Aaron now that he's doing some DC work. He's on Action Comics. He's on that Batman miniseries, Batman Offworld, that I'm enjoying. And it feels a little bit like the Jason Aaron of old, who did really fun, inventive stories and took characters you knew and love and looked at them from different angles. And, you know, we've talked to him many times over the years at conventions or comic parties or whatever. And he's got a lot of love for DC characters as well as Marvel. He's been doing Marvel for so long, but he loves DC characters. And he wrote a very moving piece this week about his love of Superman on his Substack and his Instagram. And I think you can see that here. He really gets Superman as a character. But what he did for me was he made Bizarro palatable, as well as unlocked some features in Bizarro that I haven't seen done before. Mm. It's possible that they have, because I tend to block out Bizarro stories. It starts off with Bizarro. He's sort of lost and adrift amongst the multiverse. We'll find out why later on. And he ends up at this magical planet dealing with these magicians, these magic folks who don't want him there. And they try to remove him via magic, only to find that magic doesn't hurt him. In fact, the opposite. And that's when I went, oh, shit, because as we all know, one of Superman's weaknesses is magic. And if Bizarro is opposite Superman, and look, Bizarro doesn't make any sense. If you think about Bizarro for too long and the opposite stuff, it doesn't make any sense. You have to kind of go with it. It's the comic book thing.
I will say, to that extent, by the way, one of the things here is that Jason Aaron was very consistent with the speech.
That's the second part. So the first part is the magic. So he not only is not hurt by magic, he basically absorbs it and can wield it. And I was like, oh shit, I've never seen that before. And so then at that point, Bizarro becomes like a really powerful magic wielding creature. So then he shows up on Earth, Superman confronts him, and that's when he realizes he's in trouble, because Bizarro is basically now a flying magician. Then we get to the point that Josh just mentioned, where Bizarro utters a backwards talking spell like Zatanna and fixes his dialogue. It says, basically says, make him understand me. And so then Bizarro starts talking normally, and I was like, oh, thank God. And so he started ticking all the boxes that I hate about Bizarro. And it turns into a really compelling story. This is a resetting of the Action Comics status quo. This is the first issue since Philip Kennedy Johnson's story, which we liked, especially in the beginning. I think by the end, it sort of completely fell flat. The Superman family stuff was too much. The kids were dumb. They didn't even get a mention here. Hopefully, they're just gone.
I know. There was no other super type folk in this one.
He mentions Jonathan. That's it.
That's right. Fine.
And so I'm hoping the kids are not there.
It's me, your father. That's what he said in the last issue. And I was like, no, it isn't. It is not that. This has not been earned in any way. I'm sorry. I read it this one.
I understand. I thought the same stuff. This felt very classic Bibbos here. You know, it felt like a resetting of the board for Superman. And I really liked Jason's take on Superman. And I, you know, despite my misgivings, I really ended up enjoying his take on Bizarro. I think John Timms is a great superhero artist. He's kind of in that Dan Mora school of incredibly exciting and fun layouts and page constructions with big action sequences.
Slightly angular, cartoony, but big. There's a little 90s in that, and not in a bad way.
Yeah, a little bit, for sure. The only knock on it, and someone mentioned this on the Discord, and I didn't even think about it until they said it, is that, you know, at the end of this, something happens and everyone in Metropolis turns into Bizarros, and that's sort of very similar to what's happening in the whole Teen Titans Beast World thing, but I'm not even reading that anymore, so it doesn't bother me, but...
And it's happened with Joker many times.
Right. It's just like DC can't get around turning everyone into something. But, you know, whatever. Up until that moment, it was terrific. I just had a hell of a time reading this. I think Jason Aaron is invigorated in a whole new universe. It hasn't been official. Like, no one's officially said he's switched over. No one's officially said he's signed over. Like, we haven't had any kind of announcement. But sure seems like it.
Yeah.
I think they both could use it. I think DC could definitely use it. I think Jason's been writing Marvel so long that he could use a reinvigoration in a new universe, and this might be it. I had a really fun time reading, not least because I was so surprised that he made Bizarro palatable and fun to read.
I also don't like Bizarro.
Yeah.
I hate it. I just am sort of indifferent about the whole thing. And so I kind of felt that way about the story. Like, I thought, no, that's really good. I kind of wish this wasn't the thing. But you're right in that there was nothing else in the way. They weren't building the family. Like, when you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, there were no other of these people. And there was just Lois and Jimmy, really.
Yep. And Bibbo.
And I thought that was good. I thought that the most powerful magicians and wizards in the world didn't seem all that competent. They had big hats. Well,
he's still Superman, right?
Yeah.
He's still, you know, as powerful as Superman is, so that's not nothing.
They had no wisdom. They were like, he's just like Superman. Let's magic him. It's not working. Let's magic him more. It's getting stronger. All we can do is magic him. I was like, maybe you're the strongest magicians, but you're just stupid. I mean, I guess that's possible. And what I was going to say about the language is that it's one of those things where when you say, well, having everything be opposite is a very slippery slope.
Yes.
So basically what the author has to do here is establish the rules. And the rules are going to be that when he says hate, he means love.
Mm-hmm.
And when he says sad, he means happy. And no means yes. And that's it. Like, I figured out the formula and I was like, got it. And so then we didn't have to mess around. You know what I mean? I was like, I know what's going on. And I did think the Zatanna backwards bit, I was like, oh, that's great. That's really good. But also when he says the words as they are, it's really sad.
Yes.
That to me was the great bit of lifting here, was that like you felt bad for Bizarro, like, because it's almost like, and it was like basically the idea is that the universe has been shifted around and screwed over so many times that it made his world disappear. And I was like, there's a comment there on comic books.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the other things I liked about it also, was that you do feel really bad for him. He is a tragic character. It's always a tragic character, but here, with the loss of his family, with his Bizarro Lois, and I assume Bizarro Jonathan, like, that makes him a tragic figure, and so then he's not a pure villain, and that's what makes it interesting.
Wait, his son is Boizarro.
Boizarro, that's right.
Boizarro. Just want that.
It's a good name. If you have another kid, you should consider Boizarro.
Okay, so the way that this works, for those of you who haven't heard it 1,000 times, is that if you have the pick of the week, you send a list out. This is my pick of the week. These are the other books I want to talk about. Second person who gets it makes the choices and moves around. And I just glossed it. I didn't see your pick. And so I was like, let's see, where do I put Action Comics? And I wrote it. I was like, just put it in the short section at the end. I'll just mention it. And then I went, oh, wait. Because then I even thought for a second, it's weird that he didn't mention Action Comics in here. And then my eyes flipped up and I was like, oh, it's the pick. Like, it just didn't, I didn't even consider that it was possible. So I like the surprise of it an awful lot. And I was looking forward to this discussion.
It's a really great back to basic Superman. We've had some good Superman, even if Action wasn't totally working, especially by the end. I think the Superman book that Joshua Williams is doing, and now apparently Bruno Redondo is the artist on that, is been terrific.
Wait, that's not good.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't done Nightwing in so long.
Okay.
I just think Superman's been really strong, and this was an upgrade to Action that puts it up there on par with Superman. Now, sadly, we know that just from talking to folks at DC over the years and looking at sales numbers back when we had them, or the sales estimates, people don't buy Action Comics for whatever reason. They don't buy Action. They don't buy Detective. They buy Superman. They buy Batman. Mm-hmm. And so I hope people will check this out and give it a shot, especially with this issue, which is a perfect jumping on point. It's a good start.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's a very strong comic book. And it's one of those things where it doesn't scream Jason Aaron to me, when I say that, it's kind of a ridiculous statement, because the man can do a lot of different types of things and voices, which is one of the things that's interesting about it. If you read, you know, the creator-owned stuff that he's known for, you're like, ooh, that's a dark.
Yeah, I don't want to derail this, but I did have that thought while I was reading it. I was like, man, it's been a long time since he's done a Scalped or Southern Bastards type book. And I love that. I mean, I know the market's totally different and all that stuff.
Didn't finish. There was a Boom one.
Yeah, that wasn't like that, though.
Yeah.
The Once Upon a Time in the World. I read about 6 issues of that and dropped off it.
Yeah, I missed something and I lost the thread. Yeah, but it's good to see you over here. I mean, that, you know, that whatever year and change of however long it was of Bendis on Superman, that was it was great. It was really fun. And this is too. I think all the stuff that has been swirling around Superman has been hit or miss, you know, the family and everything, and how similar it is to Fantastic Four. But the character, the Superman in the middle, I think has been very strong. We never read Superman go, that's not Superman.
It's a consistent
that's been that
Superman
way for a while, since Jurgens with the beard and everything. It's been a good Superman. And so it's nice to see that continued.
Sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum is Transformers 4, Daniel Warren Johnson, Spicer, and Wooten. And my Transformers exposure is mostly the cartoons as a kid and some of the movies as an adult. I never really read any of the, was it IDW comics? I remember you did for a while.
I tried, but it was never, I never liked
it. I never read those. So I don't know if this is different or not, but I am taken aback at the brutality of the Decepticons. I mean, they are awful.
I finished this and I have a thing where I go, oh, cool, Transformers. And then like, it was another little part of it. I was like, you never really liked this. And then, so I kind of remember as everybody else, this is really good. The thing is that a lot like the Bitter of Bill series is that like, each issue one-ups the one that came before it because it holds nothing back.
Right.
Daniel Warren Johnson and the way that he's going through this. So in this, like, you've got Starscream, who I can hear Chris Latta. Like, I can hear him. Like, clearly it's written with that animated version in mind, but he's evil. Like, he's a bad guy.
That's what took me back when he blew up the hospital. I was just like, oh, Jesus.
there was a thing here. I was like, "Ooh, that's a little real. It's a little right now. It's a little much." But it works. It hits that way. I think that the way that Prime is depicted in this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I liked that. Was it Ratchet? Was like, you know, dude, these humans. Let's be realistic. And you know, Prime won't take it. You know, and there's a lot of, you know, that sort of lofty Optimus Prime stuff. The humans are worth it. You know, like they're life forms too.
Right.
And then at the same time, every page is like, it's nonstop. It is coming at you as a reader constantly. Like, I thought looking at it, I was like, this must have been exhausting to draw. But that's not how drawing works. But that's how much energy is. I'm not kidding. I was like, oh, God, this must be so tiring to do, which is not how art works.
You can if you're working hours and hours and hours on it.
Right, I get it. But, like, it takes for hours and hours to do slow pieces, too. Mm-hmm. But, like, you just get the sense that he was just slamming espressos and just like a headband around his head and sweating on a drawing board. Like, that's what it looks like, it felt like to make.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit here where I'm trying to remember, is it, oh, there's like a, is it a kid? It's like a sick kid. He's like, hey, can you change into a car? And he's like, yes, I can. He does it and you watch it. And I was like, that's rad too. It's just, it's really exciting.
I mean, you mentioned the art. So then we had the announcement this week that Jorge Corona's taken the second arc. I don't know if it's issue 6 or 7. I don't know how many issues the first arc is. It's going to be 5 or 6. It's a bummer, but then you know, Daniel Warren Johnson wouldn't be able to keep this pace up.
No.
This is a monthly book. He would die. So I get it.
Jorge Corona's great. Middle West. Jorge Corona's
terrific artist. It's a similar style in that it's very frenetic and very crazy detailed, but you know, just not as dynamic. No one's as dynamic as
Daniel Warren Johnson, but
it'll be different.
And fair. I mean, like, hopefully he's not going to try to ape him. He's got his own thing. He can do it. But, you know, we used to say the same thing about Scotty Young, who Jorge Corona worked with on another book, too. Did you do that one about the haunted house and the lady?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So, you know, you used to be like, oh, man, it sucks that Scotty's not drawing. But he found folks who can match that style and energy. It's not the same, but it works. So I think it's a really good choice of anyway, regardless of that.
Well, I want to make two more points about this issue. Yeah. One is I am an adult, right?
Sure.
I am a grown man. I pay taxes. I've got a job. I understand how things work. I'm still like, how are we going to get out of this? You know, I'm reading it and the Autobots keep getting fucked up and fucked up and fucked up and they don't have any energy on. They can't rebuild. And I'm just like, they're not going to make it. Like, that's the voice and the kid's voice in the back of my head as I read this. Because I think it's still important to have that kid's voice when you're reading comics because you have to, right? And so, even though I know from a adult reserve, they're going to win, I'm still reading this going, God, they may not win. That's how well the story is being told. The other part is the big one-page reveal where they go into the back of the thing and because Optimus Prime lost his arm in the battle. He'd run around with one arm. And they say, I got an idea, and they weld on Megatron's cannon arm. I went, oh, fuck. So, like, this book is just incredibly fun.
I flipped back and forth because I saw the scope part. And I love that they're like, they're not going to explain the size thing, which is great. Keep going with that. I saw the cannon and I went back and I was like, oh, wait, that's his whole arm because he was missing an arm. There was a lot of flipping back and forth in this and not in a bad way. Yeah. I just wanted to see how things were done. I finished it and I was like, Jesus, this has no right to be this great. But there's a bit, again, not a giant Transformers fan, but there's a point when they're fighting and the Autobots turning around and instantly Starscream starts yelling, retreat! And I was like, I can hear it. I can, like, it was exactly what he was supposed to do, but written, you know.
He retreated quickly. He really went from arrogant to retreat. That's what he does. Yeah.
I love the Cobra Commander and Starscream sound exactly the same, but I know the difference between them. Like, they are, I'm like, no, Starscream would say it like, it's the same thing, but in my mind, those are like two different people. It's fine.
I also wonder if they tailored them to the voice. His personality is very similar to Cobra Commander. Cobra Commander's all bluster until anything happens and he runs.
I love that the guy was like, I'm going to just do the same one, if that's cool. And they were all like, yeah, that's fine.
And then, of course, the big cliffhanger reveal is, as Starscream is proclaiming himself, you know, emperor of the Decepticons, is Megatron's body missing the arm, sort of stuck in the ice like Captain America, sort of.
And I saw that and I thought, God, how bad is he gonna be? Right. Like, I had the thought, I was like, well, Starscream is evil, but he's stupid, so at least they, oh no. And it was again that same, like, I genuinely felt that drama. Like, and there's the shot of like the girl and she's sad, and
yeah,
Cliff Jumper goes and sits by. I was like, it's a really human moment. That is an extremely Robert Kirkman thing to do.
Yeah.
That scene.
Let me ask you a question. Is the Energon universe the most exciting thing in comics right now? Because when we talked offline, just as friends during the holidays, it was like, can you believe Duke? Can you believe how good G.I. Joe is? Like,
I mean,
right now, when Transformers, Duke, and G.I. Joe Real American Hero, which I know it's not part of the Energon universe, but whatever, come out, I'm incredibly excited.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's such a narrow casting thing.
Oh, sure.
It's like,
sure,
you've taken, you know, some of our absolute favorite comic book creators and you put them on, you know, after Star Wars, our absolute favorite properties, and they made it real good. And, you know, we are both, I mean, we are both just limping into late middle age. And so mid-middle age, who knows?
Mid-middle age, come on.
But whatever, like, it is just talking to exactly what you and I as particular individuals, and I'm guessing some part of our audience, really likes. So I'd add, for me, you know, is it the most
exciting? That's all you can answer for. Yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes you can, but like, this one is so specific that I couldn't speak for anybody else on it.
I'm excited for Cobra Commander.
Yes. I mean, honestly, I finished this book and I was like, that was amazing. Like, I took a moment. I was like, that was amazing. Now, I don't remember which I read first.
Uh-huh.
I think I read Petrolhead first and then did Transformers, but it may have been the other way around, because the fact is, at the end of both of them, I said the same thing.
Right.
I finished Petrolhead from Rob Williams and Pi Par.
Number three.
Third issue. And I've been really enjoying it. I think the first one was the patron pick.
Yes.
I was really into the second. And again, that same, like, I just thought, I don't know any comics like this right now. It's got such incredible energy.
Yes.
And it was structured so well that, like, I just went, it's only three issues? I feel like I know so much about this world. You know, and I'm still at a point where I want to know more about these main characters, but just constant, like the way that, so in this issue, they basically flashback and they set up who these robot racers are, why they exist, and how they feel.
Yeah.
And there is a bit here where, what's he called? O? The big bad guy with the big brain?
Yeah, something like that. O-Face.
Something like that.
Not O-Face, that was something else. It's the O. He has an O-Face. But it's
he says something along the lines of, he's like, well, you know, we can beat these guys. And he looks at me, goes, you're human. You worry about all the things you could be. And robots are built to do one thing. And there's no doubt about it. And I was like, yeah, that's real good. I was so good. I downloaded the last couple issues of 2000 AD. I was like, well, I need to find more Rob Williams in my life right now.
Well, I think number one, we're talking about eight books in the show, four of them are from Image. This week I had 20 books, 10 of whom were not Marvel DC. Mostly they were Image, but there were 10. So half my reading list this week was non-Marvel DC. I think Image is back a little bit.
I mean, just great books, for sure.
They've got a lot of exciting things going on right now. It'll never quite be that Image boom from a few years ago where Ron, our co-host, helped bring all those guys over and they had all these incredible Marvel and DC guys making incredible books. It's never going to be that again, or at least not for a long time, but it went fallow for a while, but now I'm like, there's a lot of Image books I'm excited to read.
Yeah, and I mean, for a while, that was all excited because they were like big deals. People were making a lot of money at the same time as the books were big and exciting, right. But a lot of those never finished. And now I feel like it's more, I can almost separate the Skybound stuff to a certain extent because it's, you know, at the end, it is licensed stuff. It's really good.
It doesn't matter how, it just has to be good though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just, it has a different feeling. But do you have any Petrolhead thoughts? I went through it.
Well, it's sort of similar to what we've talked about. I think this might have been the best issue. I still marvel at Pi Par, who has seemed to have come out of nowhere, I'm sure, was on 2000 AD.
Lettered the damn thing.
Who does everything. Pencils, colors, letters. It's all incredible. I love the bright colors.
Stunning designs.
The robot designs are incredible. The car stuff is amazing. He's like up there with Sean Murphy for car drawing. And you said this is an issue where we got a lot of backstory, which I think we sorely needed at this point. We're not super far into it, but I think it was an important part to get to the start of the backstory of these characters, these robot characters. I love this hybrid character.
Yes.
And it was probably the best issue so far. And it just looks amazing. I mean, geez.
Just such a good sci-fi social commentary, but exciting. It's all of the best things. I finished, I was like, that is just, we don't even deserve it. I was so happy at the end of these last two comic books.
Yeah.
Apparently, I like robots and cars.
Oh, who knew?
I don't know. I had no idea. I really wouldn't consider that a thing of mine, but
I'm scrolling through this issue and I'm marveling at the colors. I really think the colors are one of the best things about this book. The racing is all very red heavy. And then when you go into where the O is, it's all very blue. It's all very poppy. It's very bright. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of books are dour and dark, and this is a very bright. I want to say happy book because the book isn't happy, but the colors are. And that really works with the tension with the art and the story.
He has a cigar hole.
He's great. He's a robot who smokes a cigar.
The other guy comes out hybrid. He's got a collar for some reason. They want his cookies, and like, it's just all like, it's like folksy and silly. It moves super fast. Basically the end of the issue, they make it to the one guy's house, and then like the people who are going to have to work together and don't, well, yo, I'm too old for this. I don't want to do it. And then that panel of that scene ends with the sound effects of growl, which is also the artist. I'm like, what's that? 2-page spread of the car of the person who we were alluded to earlier, who becomes, you know, the big bad of this, or, you know, for now anyway. Anything could happen. That's what I really like about it. Like, it's very well constructed. Like, and something happens, you think, oh, that's how that had to happen. That's great. It's just doing all the things right, not necessarily like surprising you, but I don't know what's going to happen because of that.
That's good. It's a good comic.
I even like the concept sketches at the end. It's just makes me happy. Do you read Swan Songs?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I don't rightly know that this week's issue can be considered a comic book. There's some comic book in it. So what we have here, Swan Songs is number 6. I don't know if it's the last one. It'd be a hell of a last issue if it was. I don't remember how many ha-has there were. But Swan Songs, so the theme is there's a one-issue story about the end of something.
I think it is the end.
I mean, I don't know. You can't do this.
It says the end. Giant letters in the end.
Well, there you go. So this, on the front, if you know anything about...
Sorry, I cut you off. The premise is every issue is about an ending of something, of the Swan Song. Right. So it's an anthology. It's W. Maxwell Prince did this with Ha Ha. We did different clown stories, and this is just different artists of every issue.
This is structured after Shel Silverstein's Where the Sidewalk Ends, or it's in the style of his poetry. If you grew up as Shel Silverstein, you know exactly what this is. By the way, it's a swan pushing the people off the end of the sidewalk. There is a narrative being told by a person who is apparently in some sort of mental health facility, insane asylum, we would have used to say. That's the ice cream man on the first page, too.
Yeah.
I need to read that. I need to go back and read it. These are just too good to not go read that. I feel like I missed something. So as we go through this, there's a series of Shel Silverstein-like poems. And when I say Shel Silverstein-like poems, the reproduction of both the illustrations and the meter of his rhymes is stunning. I was blown away. I'm a big, like, this Shel Silverstein poems are a really big part of my life as a kid, as were the recordings. So as I read through, I can hear him saying the words. It was funny because I used to listen to the tapes or whatever with my grandmother. And so at a certain point, my kids got older. I downloaded them or whatever. And I remembered every syllable and the way that he said them. And my kids really liked it too.
That's good.
Because he was such an interesting dude. And so as you go through this, there is a narrative. It's pretty sad. The father has to go into the asylum, and the mother and the daughter are left alone. She becomes a prostitute. The kid ends up hanging with the bad crowd. Then you find out the guy who's running the facilities, you know, kind of evil. And there's a quick comic thing where the character grabs a camera and he speaks to, you know, us directly in comic book form.
Right.
I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
I mean, I have, because it's a parody of a thing or whatever it is. A tribute. It's a something.
I mean, as a work of tribute, it was really well done. I don't know. If you weren't familiar with what he was tributing, how much this would be successful.
Yes.
The illustrations were really strong.
Were you a Shel Silverstein kid?
Yeah, but not as much as you, clearly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as our age, it was hard not to have at least exposure to it. But the way it was melded into what he's been doing in the series worked well. And I thought the ending was appropriately dark. And if you look at it from the lens of this is the final issue, it's very much sort of the thesis of the book, right? Which is the final lines where the clock is ticking, the end is nigh. What will you do with this limited time on the spinning rock? On your limited time with the spinning rock? The clock's ticking, the end is nigh, what will you do? So that seems like the end of the story, because that's sort of the thesis of this whole book.
The back cover is, you know, the other side of the painting. It would be on the front, and it's, you know, the end of the sidewalk.
It's after Shel Silverstein in the bottom, yeah.
Which is a cartoonist thing to do. You know, so you do somebody else's style and you say after that, that's a tribute. Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I have to give it credit for is that each story that came before it, each other issue, was completely different than every other one. And so if he was just doing impersonation each one, but it's not. Like, and then they were all different from the Ha Ha stories. I don't know who this W. Maxwell Prince person is, but It's an amazing range. You know, it's one of the best short comic book storytellers that I've come across in quite a while. It'll be really interesting to see where W goes in the future. I have no idea if he or she or what.
I mean, it wasn't my favorite issue of the series, but I was really impressed by the craft of it.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Again, I was extremely impressed by just the craft, the execution. I think the execution was like, there wasn't a false step in it. Like, it was great. It was really well done. You know, good work. I'm really happy that this work keeps getting done. If we're talking about Image, like, I don't know how big the audience is for something like this, but this is high level work in fucking short stories in a conceptual book.
Well, it's the second anthology series. It must have done well enough the first time through to do a second one.
I'm guessing smart people in bookstores learned about it and bought those books, and they let them do another one.
Hope so.
Yeah, I was really impressed. I immediately reached out to Paul Montgomery, former host of the show, and I was like, I don't know if you're still keeping up with this, but this is a thing that you specifically need to read now. And he was like, thank you very much. Like, I could tell it hit home the way that it was supposed to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bloodrick 2. We had Bloodrick 1. That was it the patron pick? I don't remember.
No, it wasn't. I read it, and then you happened to read it, and you were like in love with it.
I loved the first issue, yeah.
When we talked about it, I was like, yeah, that was really good. Like, I enjoyed it because I liked the backstory of it. And then the second one came out, and I just thought, oh, wow, that was also really good.
It was good. It wasn't as good as the first issue. I'm not surprised. The first issue, he had, like, you know, so long to come up with.
Yeah.
And it was like a perfect short story that had the first issue. This, you know, expands the character now that he has survived the bear fight, although he lost his catch. The bear took the dead deer, so he lost his food. He manages to stumble his way to a village in the mountains after hallucinating about a bunch of deer and finding the mountains village completely empty of people. So there's some mystery that we're getting into some of a bit of a story.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting our Conan stories. I think the thing is, like, he lost his deer, and I really felt for him. I was like, oh, man. So I'm rooting for him now after that last bit. And he's wandering around. He's in his pair of briefs. Like, he's got to be frozen. He's very
hungry.
Look
at his size. He needs protein. He needs that constant fuel, and he just is not getting it.
His body can be eaten for quite a while, and he's still holding up well. He's looking better than I ever have, and he's a cartoon.
Well, it's like when you watch Survivor, the really big, muscly guys usually break down first because they don't have that constant fuel that the skinnier people don't need.
I only watched the first season and a half, so I don't remember.
Well, that's what happens usually. The big muscly guys have bigger problems because they don't have the protein intake.
So whereas I can get there and just, I'll like, my middle will get eaten up and I'll be fine.
You have other problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Deep, deep problems.
Sunburns, mostly. That would be
it. That guy just caught on fire. He just spontaneously combusted.
Never seen anybody react to a mosquito bite quite so severely. That's quite a thing. Then there's a little fun short story at the end, which I actually really liked. The cartooning's really fun. The sort of layouts
really
that he's been doing. The haggardness and desperateness of I'm telling you, this is like when you can combine Gru and Conan together. Steadily self-serious Conan, but he's a little Gru.
It's silly. It's a silly, serious story.
It's fun. I just was happy for more.
The art's exaggerated enough that plays into that aspect of it. This is another Image book we just talked about four in a row. Good stuff happening in Image right now. I do want to mention briefly the sensational She-Hulk 182 or 4. And this is nothing against Igara, who's, I think, a good artist. But I really missed Andrea's Genele in this issue in particular because this was the fun girls' night out issue. And Andrea Genele does a really good job of making them fun. And it's a fun and sexy comic. So he draws them in a fun, sexy way, not an over the top. And I thought that Igara or Gyara's style didn't really mesh with the story that was being told.
I don't think I noticed it one way or another until we got to the part. Like, when you say it, I'm like, oh, yeah, the fashion's not exactly the same. But then we got to Carol Danvers, and I was like, ugh. Not only does she have her stupid jacket, which is even stupider in her own book, which I've dropped, by the way. I can't take
it. Yeah,
I
didn't. I dropped that too.
I gave it four issues, I think. And I was like, this is terrible. But she meets them on the street in her street clothes, and she's got a tiny little jacket on too. And I was like, no, that's not how this is supposed to go. I really liked, she doesn't want to go out. I like how she's haggard in this one. Before, there's a new problem for her in this one.
She's having a bad day.
Yeah,
and the thing with everybody hates her because of the Hulk. Well, the Hulk didn't last issue, and her boss.
And they were like, "Why don't you just go as Jen?" And I was like, "God, that's brilliant! Why didn't she just go as Jen?" And it changes everything a little bit. Yeah. And there's a really nice moment where Jack is like, "Oh, look at you! I miss that face," you know. And she doesn't know how to take it.
Right.
That's really interesting to me.
Oh, the writing was still such stellar in this issue. I just missed it.
There's a lot of great writing.
If you're going to have a girls' night out with Jen and Patsy Walker and Carol Danvers, you need to have your fun, sexy artist doing it. Mm-hmm. This is a rom-com, basically.
Yeah. You know what the worst part of this is, though?
What?
I can't stand Jack Arts. I don't like him. I don't know why she's into him.
You saw Patsy Walker's reaction.
I know, like, but I don't buy it. It's like one of the, I'm trying to think. There's definitely some show where like a character's supposed to be attractive and everyone's watching it like, no, that's not a.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of telling us he's attractive. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean? Like the characters tell you things.
There's one page basically that takes place in the office and it does so much in that one. It's great. She walks in. Mallory yells at her. There's three people on the bench. One of them's a Moloch or what are they called? Moloid. And then there's this other guy, Devil Slayer, and he's complaining about the rights to the term defenders. What's the other guy? What's the green and yellow guy? That's not an AIM guy. It's a.
The green and yellow guy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who is that guy? One of
it's not Hydra, something like that. I don't think it's because. Is it Hydra? Either way.
He's hot in the background.
Look how much ground that page covers.
Yeah, a lot.
You know? Not like filled up. I just thought it was a time. Because I was going to say, oh, it's a great scene in the office. And I was like, that's really only the one page. Just great writing. Yeah.
The writing's terrific. I just wish we had that different artist. It's fine.
Long for a world where the same artist is on every issue of something.
Well, particularly this one. If you're going to have Girls' Night Out, it should be a specific kind of artist who can do that in a fun way. Like Guerra doesn't. That's not the artist's strong suit.
But from the editorial standpoint, it's the one that's out of step with the other issues, and so you have your person do the longer arc, and then the fill-in one comes in. I mean, I know you do. I understand.
You know,
can't win.
Over the break. Oh, we had a new Bendis book launch on Dark Horse called Masterpiece. Issue 1 came out over the break. Issue 2 came out this week. It's drawn by old pal Alex Maleev. Ian Herring and Joshua Reed round out the cast of creators. And it's fun. I'm enjoying it. I don't love it. It's a problem. The two main characters are teenage Gen Zers and they're annoying.
Written by an old man.
Just the dialogue and what they're so strident and,
It's all right. It's all right.
It's just annoying. But the setup's interesting and fun. The idea is that this young girl, 15 years old, doesn't realize that her parents were like world-class criminals because she hasn't seen them in forever, that she's been left in the care of their friend. They disappeared. And she finds this out because the billionaire they stole a bunch of money from shows up and says, basically, you owe me billions of dollars. You're going to have to work for me. And so then it's all about getting this sort of heist crew together to help fulfill his needs, you know, to get money back. There's this one guy that they introduced who was a buddy of their parents who... His whole thing, it was in the 90s, he was a vigilante. He would go and beat up anybody who was very publicly a jerk. Like if there was a news story about somebody being an asshole, he would just show up and beat them up. And that was it. That's all he did. They enlist his help. I thought it was a lot of fun. The Maleev art's strong. The main characters are kind of annoying, but that's to be expected. And they're going to go after Martha Stewart or some facsimile of her.
I know I can't recapture what I loved about Bendis back then. And so it all feels like it's sort of lacking. And so
I'll never
didn't,
be that.
I didn't. Again. I know. And so therefore, I don't really want what it is now.
I understand. Totally.
Yeah. So I saw the solicit for the last one. I thought, nah. And it was just like, he used to be a vigilante. I was like, all right, I get it. Like, I had enough.
I'm in for the arc. I'm in to see where the arc goes. And then we'll assess on beyond that. I mean, it is what it is. You know, the times change, tastes change. But I don't even think that. I think execution changes as creators change. As they get older, what they're interested in doing changes and how they write
things
different.
Same people.
It's not the Bendis of the crazy, you know, word balloons and double page spreads. That's just not what he's doing, at least in this series. And so it's different, you know.
And to be fair, I'm not suggesting he's doing anything wrong or bad.
No, just things change.
I just have such a relationship with the work of that time that I don't
know. It's very important. It brought you back into comics, basically.
Sure. No, it was a really big deal. And, you know, some people grow along with you and some people grow up and do a different thing. And I'm not into his thing.
Understandable. Those are the comics we don't talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, the patrons who support the show, one of the rewards they get is that every single patron is given the vote. They all get the vote to add a book to the rundown. It's called the patron pick. One patron, one vote. You vote to add a book to the rundown this week by overwhelming margins. The winner was Ultimate Spider-Man number one, the reboot of a new Ultimate Universe by Jonathan Hickman, Marco Cecchetto, Matthew Wilson, and Corey Pettit. And this ties into what Hickman had done in that Ultimate Universe two-issue miniseries in which the creator, who is Reed Richards from the original Ultimate Universe, went to some universe in the Marvel multiverse and tinkered with it so there were no superheroes, so that he and his criminal buddies could run it secretly from the shadows as a sort of old man Logan-esque carving of territories. But there are no heroes in this world until, in the very end of this issue, Peter Parker, middle-aged, 35-year-old Peter Parker, wife, two kids, is given the spider to give himself a bite to become Spider-Man. Only on the very last panel does he become Spider-Man. So, Josh, you are not a noted fan of Jonathan and Hickman, but we were big fans of the Ultimate Spider-Man books and the Ultimate Universe, at least in the beginning. Double-sized issue, drawn by Marco Cecchetto. What were your thoughts?
I think that I've liked Hickman more as he's stuck a little more to like his mainstream side.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I was looking forward to this, though. I really like Marco Cecchetto. Mm-hmm. I do not like his Peter Parker design. Like, it looks like 70s hair. I don't know what it is. Something or like 80s.
The beard was old.
It looks like they would have drawn the character like in the late 80s. Like, he looks like a character who would have been from West Coast Avengers, which I don't really have a problem with, but I couldn't get past it. I thought all of the setup for this was really fun and well thought out. I kept waiting for the shoe to drop, and it kind of didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was going to be a twist, and I was waiting for it. If you know what I mean, like, I thought at the end we were going to find out, like, he wasn't Spider-Man and somebody else was or whatever. And I'm actually really glad that it didn't happen.
Right.
Because it was kind of, you know, this is Peter Parker and this is the thing and he's going to be Spider-Man or who he is. Although they didn't quite, I also felt like I didn't quite get enough at the end.
I wonder if it's a play on the idea that it was a whole arc until Peter became Spider-Man in the original miniseries, the original Ultimate Spider-Man. He was, he was that. There's a whole Bendis took 6 issues to do what Lee and Ditko did in one page.
Fair.
So what's different here is that in the Ultimate Universe miniseries, the bad guys framed Tony Stark, who in this world is a teenager, with a terrorist attack that killed several of the Spider-Man supporting characters because it was in New York. So Aunt May is dead. Norman Osborn is dead. His wife is dead. And so here, the Green Goblin is Harry in a unfortunate armored suit, and Kingpin owns the Daily Bugle, where Ben Parker, since there was no Spider-Man, Ben Parker's alive, and he is the managing editor of the paper of the Daily Bugle, along with J. Jonah Jameson. And they're both really awesome people, which I think is another twist, is that J. Jonah Jameson's not a jerk.
Even Joe Jameson looks exactly the same. Like, they haven't redone at least the same design.
Right.
Classic J. Jonah Jameson look.
You think he's a jerk. We meet him first yelling, Parker, Parker, right. Parker, and we realize why. He's actually a pretty awesome old school New York newsman. So is Ben Parker. But Kingpin forces them both out. And so now they're going to go off and start their own news business.
Terrible idea.
Peter is also working at the paper. We don't have a sense what Peter's job at the paper is, but he works at the paper as well.
Mm-hmm.
He is happily married to supermodel Mary Jane, and they have 2 kids. And so that's really the only difference. And somehow, teenage Tony Stark is able to get a message to Peter and sends him this, package that has the spider in it and says, you can go on living your life as it is now, or you can open this vial and you can be the hero you were always meant to be. And that's the cliffhanger as he does it, because he's always felt there's something missing in his life, some hole in it that was never filled. And it was because he was never Spider-Man. I thought it was solid. I didn't love it. There's got to be a why for this. Like, why go back to the Ultimate Universe? There's got to be, I'm hoping that there'll be a why revealed.
I think that's what it was. I think I was very into craft and structure and like, you got 2 people functioning at a high level with a writer and artist. But ultimately, there wasn't really a thing for me to grab on too much. Like, this Peter was just mopey and sad. Like, there was nothing about this character that made me think of Peter Parker. Like, we have to wait for him to get there. I got Peter Parker already. What are you giving me that I don't have already? Like,
right. I wonder if this is just the throwing some chum to the online fans who've been screaming for Peter to get older and married the whole time. Here you go. You got your book. But at one point, there's like a 5-page sequence where he and Mary are just sitting there talking on the couch. And I was like, oh, God, I don't want this at all.
You said we'd talk later. Now, don't. We're going to talk. And I was like, are they going to have sexy time? Nope. They're going to have a talk.
For 5 pages about their feelings.
Was it 5 pages? I mean, it was really well written. So I don't think I noticed that.
But it was well written. The dialogue was good, but it's just like, this is exactly what I don't want an older, middle-aged, married Peter Parker.
The fact is, if this had just been about J. Jonah and Ben Parker's newspaper adventures, there's your book right there. The rest of it, I didn't care about.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. Peter Parker's old. He's sad. Something's missing. Yeah, I get it. It's the middle-aged writer is writing about this. Yep, it all makes sense, but I've seen it. So, and I'm not saying it's not there and they take their time with it, but for me to be interested in it, I need something and I have it.
Especially the Spider-Man, the Ultimate Spider-Man book. That was one of the great books of that decade.
Well, this was like the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Like that was fresh and exciting
and fun.
And it, you know, and this was like, yeah, but what if he's old and boring? And I was like, I am old and boring.
I don't read these books to see myself reflected back at me.
I do not need to be validated. I don't need to see myself. It's all about me because all TV comic writers are me.
Right.
The one step removed. So what do you got? And that's what I didn't have. I'm working my way through this as we talk about it.
It's interesting the choices they made for the book. So we have Ultimate Black Panther by Brian Hill and Stefano Caselli coming out in February, and then Ultimate X-Men by Peach Momoko, who is, I think, a YA artist writer coming out in March. It'll be interesting to see what this experiment yields and why. Because the original purpose of the Ultimate Universe was in the year 2000, Marvel continuity was jumbled in a mess, and the publishers of Marvel at the time thought, if we create a line where there's no continuity mess, where kids can come in and read a story and not have to know 30 years of history, that's a good thing. And that's what they started off being, of course, as everything. The longer it went, the more it got its own continuity that became a mess. Mm-hmm. But books totally didn't work like Ultimate X-Men. But Ultimate Spider-Man and all the Ultimates and some of the other miniseries were fun. And it was for a while, it was a fun place. And that's how we got Miles Morales. And that led to good stories. And then they brought Miles Morales into this world. And that was dumb. And there's got to be a reason to come back to this kind of storytelling and branding. We'll see if there is one.
I just don't know what if it's tied to the Ultimate Reed, you know, that's what that story is going to be. Because he's the big bad for everything.
Yeah. I thought it was well written. I thought the art was strong, other than Peter's terrible beard. It just wasn't well groomed.
I have a terrible beard. I don't need read a character.
You don't need middle-aged Peter with glasses and a beard.
Yeah.
Moping about his bad back.
Yep. I really like being worried about his job, worried about the security, if he's going to be able to take care of his kids. Like, wipe that family out. Give him something to fight for.
That's not escapism.
No, it isn't. You know what? You're right. Not at all. Maybe that's why I'm upset. Maybe it stressed me out. This is like The Sims.
It is like The Sims. I have an apartment to clean. I don't need to clean a fake apartment. Yeah. So let's do ratings. I almost forgot to do ratings. On Ultimate Spider-Man number 1, ratings out of 5, I'm going to give it a 4.
3.
Sticking with it?
I'm going to read the next one.
You got to read the next one to see if I'm a Spider-Man, see if what the point is.
I know. That's what I said.
All right. So there you go.
I'll read the next one.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron gets the vote to add a book to the rundown. And the patrons are the ones that directly support this show and all of our family of iFanboy shows. Everyone who does whatever they can in the following ways helps support the show. But the patrons are the main ones. They unlock shows for everybody. That's why you get a Talksplode and a Booksplode. That's why you get a Mediasplode. They get to become part of a great community. There's a Discord server that is growing every day. There's apparently still a Facebook group. And there's a monthly patron hangout where we all come together for an hour or so. Sometimes longer. We have sometimes a pre-show with some friends of the show, like Mike Romo and Ryan Haupts come. Just have some drinks and chat online, and it's fun. We have a good time doing it. We'll be doing our next one in a couple of weeks. They get tier-exclusive merchandise. Depending on what level of patrons they are, they get exclusive t-shirts and sweatshirts and mugs and stickers and posters. And we thank everyone who's a patron. We could not do the show without you. We appreciate all the support. Thank you. Consider becoming one today if you can. Even you can do it for $1 a month. You can even do it for free if you want. You don't have to pay to be a patron of the show. We do appreciate that. iFanboy.threadless.com is our merch store. We got 13 designs on t-shirts and more merchandise. iFanboy.com/support is our digital PayPal tip jar. iFanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find links to our Booksplode books, as well as the general Amazon shopping link. And, you know, if you got stuff over the holidays that maybe you already had, or you had to return, or maybe you got some gift cards or some money, iFanboy.com/Amazon for all your post shopping needs, all your post shopping sales happening. Check that out over there. And then bookshop.org is our partner for local bookstores across the country. If you order for them, local bookstores fulfill your order to help keep them in business. It keeps those vital parts of our communities alive. And we do appreciate anyone who does any of those things to help keep the show going. We appreciate that very much. Now, our final patron reward of the day is the patron power. That's any patron at the $5 or higher level gets one live on the show. They get their own superpower. And this week, Josh is in charge of it.
So Jason Wesson is certified 100% bet on it, box office gold.
Oh.
Get this guy in front of a camera, people are going to show up. They're going to
He's the last movie star.
He's box office gold is what he is.
Even if he's in a bit part, like even if he's like in a background actor, he's still, the movie's a box office hit and no one knows why.
Yeah, they're going to walk out of that. It might take the business and the executives a while to figure out what's going to happen, but they'll figure it out. Something about this kid. I can't take my eyes off him. He's got it. Like, what is it? Who can say? If we could, we'd bottle it. But Jason's got it in spades. Box office gold. Gangbusters, kid.
I love that one.
Thank you.
I do love that one. I love it even more if that no one knows why. He's just like a professional background actor, and his movies that he just happens to be in keep being random hits, and they're like, why is this happening?
My note is I just wrote box office gold. And as you're coming to me, I go, I don't know what this is. And I felt good. I felt good on how it came out. Everything's all right.
Thank you, Jason, for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you want a patron power live on the show, you can be one at the $5 or higher level. Let's answer some emails. Carl C. I sometimes have fantasies about Marvel and DC having to go through the infamous DC implosion of the 80s. Paring the lines back to a bare minimum that forces them to do the absolute best. With the state of comics, do you think this could ever happen again? No.
Not for the same reason. But I think there's...
Let's get some context first. So
yes,
in the 80s, it's called the DC implosion. It's when DC like pared its line of comics way, 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 way down for various business reasons. They were putting out a lot of comics, and suddenly they were putting out hardly any comics, and then people, you know, think it allowed them to really focus, and a lot of great comics came out of that period. And then you had 86, and then you're off to the races. So that's what the DC implosion was in the 80s.
Yeah, and that was a different kind. I think it is possible that several levels up the corporate chain, somebody could just look at it one day and go, why are we doing this? I give people that sort of short-sightedness that it could happen in today's quarter-based corporate economy.
I see. I think the opposite. I think they have to support this corporate structure, and you can't do that with just 10 titles. There's a whole structure at DC. There's hundreds and hundreds of people who work in DC outside of even the comics, and
no,
all those people
I get that.
Wouldn't.
And maybe it's not 10. Maybe they just slash publishing. They just print reprints. I don't know. Like, but
no,
I
again,
could see
that, all that stuff needs to happen. Those people are still in charge. The publishing guys are still the ones who make the calls and everything.
I don't.
Like, everyone thinks that the comics are the lowest part of the pole, but they're not.
I don't even mean
they're
like this
important.
Epoch. I'm just saying I could see it happening.
Right. I know. I'm just saying from my experience having worked with Warner Brothers.
Sure.
If you're in charge of driving revenue, look, anything is possible, especially with Warner Brothers Discovery and with Disney and Marvel. Anything is possible. But I do think that these corporate ecosystems are so big.
Sure.
And there's so much money that goes through them. You know, they drive so much in terms of consumer product sales. And Marvel takes the storylines directly from the comics to the movies. Like, I just can't see them being like, we're going to do 8 titles now.
I think it's less likely for Marvel. I mean, basically what I'm getting at is I'm talking about drastically cutting down publishing from what it is now. I could see that happening.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I mean,
certainly.
So in the 80s, this happened it happened in 78, but 78 is when the DC implosion happened. They immediately canceled 17 titles, and then they canceled another 14 after that. So you're talking about 30 something titles got canceled.
Was DC part of a conglomerate at that point? They must have been.
In 78, when did Warner Brothers buy them?
That was later. That was in the early 80s. Because
maybe it was right before that.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they were their own independent business at that point, I can see that.
Yeah. You know,
that makes
sense.
That's
totally different. That's what I mean. If, exactly. if they were just publishers, if it was Image or Dark Horse or whoever, all the Dark Horse is owned by Embracer, but they're a cog in such a giant wheel, I can't imagine them being able to do that.
No, I mean, it wouldn't ever happen in that way for those reasons now, because, I mean, that might happen to Ahoy Comics or, you know, any other, you know, cross-gen. Yeah. It's happened before. That's more like that. You know, things are...
Ahoy, hoy.
Things are changing so quickly that I have this, like, nothing is sacred and nothing is safe in the way that we know it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I just think... I mean, at one point DC was publishing with it 52 titles when the 52 came out. So I could see it going down to like 40 maybe, but they're never going to go down to like 10. That's just never going to happen. Mm. There's too much infrastructure that has to be supported.
I get it. There's merchandising, there's whatever, but like, how much of that actually depends on the comic books? Like, the stuff already exists.
Well, the characters come from the comic books. Like, why is,
I know, but it already exists.
Why is Harley one of the most popular characters?
It has nothing to do with the comic books. It's because she was in a movie.
No, she was popular before that.
In comics, though, but that's nothing. That's small potatoes. That's spare change.
But again, it's not about the revenue. It's about what it supports. It's a whole, mm-hmm. It's an amoeba. It's like cutting your arm off. It's like, it's just an arm, but you can't pick anything up. It's like, it's a whole body. That
look what they did to HBO.
HBO's still putting shows up. The same number of shows they've always done.
I know. It's a bad example. Look what they did to it in my mind without the proper context of the conversation that we already had. How about that, Connor?
Why don't they do shows I like anymore?
I didn't mean that.
Ryan S. from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. With DC continuity more or less leaning into nothing makes sense, nothing matters, I wanted to ask you what you think the continuity status of the Killing Joke should be. For Batman and the Joker, the question is mostly kind of irrelevant, in my opinion, but the biggest in-the-universe impact of the story was paralyzing Barbara Gordon. If you were making the call, would you keep the Killing Joke as an in-continuity story, label it Elseworlds, or take the current DC approach and just shrug about it? I've been thinking about this question since I got the Killing Joke for Christmas when I was 13 and was so glad my mom did not flip through the book before wrapping it and putting it under the tree 24 years ago.
Shrugging about it is the same thing as not acknowledging it. To me, like in comic book world, it's the same thing.
Shrugging?
Yeah, I mean like saying like shrugging is ignoring it, and which is a way of tacitly saying it's not.
Well, it's never been fully in continuity. They just took the one event out of it and used that. Yes. I mean, at the end of the book, Batman kills the Joker, so it's not right, it's clearly not in continuity.
I think that was a mistake, though. Like, it should have never been in any continuity of any kind.
Sure.
It's one of those things that's too serious. Like, the fact that the character has to ignore the fact that and go on by being a super librarian, you know, with a lot of computers because this maniac shot her, and then you have to ignore the fact that, like, they drove Commissioner Gordon mad. It shouldn't have been brought into the continuity.
It should never have happened. I mean, I love the Oracle, but she should have just stayed Batgirl. That's always, I mean,
yes.
That's no
and she is now.
Right. So,
and they do comic book, you know, mysticism to make sure she can walk again. And then they just don't refer to it. And if that's the best thing to do, that's fine.
But it's important. It's never really been in continuity because of, I think Denny O'Neill talked about this at some point. I remember reading that and talking about it. But like, they took the idea of her having been shot and paralyzed and used that in the comics, but they couldn't take the whole story. So they really just kind of picked and choose, which is how comics work anyway, right? So they just picked and choose the things that worked for them and used that, and they ignored the rest, which they had to because it was too dark. You know, just ignoring all the implied sexual assault as well. And then, again, the murder of the Joker at the end by Batman. So it was never fully in continuity anyway. That's what I would do. I'd shrug about it. If you can't go back and remove it, which they should have done with the New 52, just not have ever been shot, but they, of course, muddled all that stuff with the New 52. If you can't go back and just erase it, then you just do what they did, which is just, at one point, the Joker shot Barbara and she became paralyzed for a while. She was Oracle for a while. She got her legs back. Sometimes she's Batgirl, sometimes she's Oracle, sometimes she's both.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're at now.
I don't know if we gained anything by having her be paralyzed or, I don't know, maybe that was... Maybe that, you know, there's something about representation to be said there, but I don't know.
Well, I was a huge, at that time, a Bronze Age Batman reader. I was a huge Barbara Gordon Batgirl fan, so of course I didn't want it to happen. But I think her character was a good character. And
yes.
Some people say she's a stronger character for it. I don't know if that's true because she was a very big, important piece of this puzzle back then. But, you know, DC continuity is taking, you know, just sort of a messy approach to everything right now. They don't really have much of one.
There isn't one. And that you know... I'm all right in a way that if they're just like, we're just not going to bother with any of it, I'm kind of like, fine, that's cool. Do that. But it's weird that, you know, like you don't have a Justice League book. I mean, there might be one, but because there's no shared, whatever's happening in Batman is so far removed from what's happening in Superman that they can't come together.
Let me ask you a question. So I was catching up on the books. I still have about 6 or 7 books left from the break to read. I was reading a couple last night, or not the other night before I read my books for this week, and I was reading Wonder Woman. And I was like, I know there's been offhand remarks in other books about the Amazons being banned from the U.S., just sort of just a weak attempts at drawing it in. But it feels like such a black label book, such a out of continuity book, such a book that would never happen in the actual continuity when I read that. It's a great book, but it's just like, this would never happen in the DCU. And it doesn't feel like it's happening in the DCU. And, you know, it's a mess, DC.
Yeah. And like, you know, individually in those books, the books are fine on their own, but I think that you do miss, like, why isn't there a JLA? Well, there's mm-hmm. no cohesion in the universe. Like,
they're busy fighting Godzilla. That's the only JLA book I'm aware of. JLA versus Godzilla versus Kong.
If that's what they want, then fine. I do see a value to, like, understand why that would be easier for them. Like, no, this, the Batman people have the thing going on here, and we'll pay, like, a little lip service, but there is no, it's just not what it was. And that's how you get, that's the only way you're getting Tom King to write a Wonder Woman book. You know, it's not like at this point, he's like, I'm not going to make sure that she's standing at this place at this time.
Right.
Because Beast World's going on. Like, we're not doing that. So
to answer Ryan's question, I would shrug about it because that's all you can do, really, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. It's not in continuity. It's never really been in continuity, despite what they said. Mm-hmm. Just that one element of it, that one page. Contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write in. Like Carl and Ryan, you can also write in to be on our Media Splode show, our monthly non-comics show. You can put Media Splode in the subject line. That's how you get that email into the proper folder. Speaking of Media Splodes, last week we were totally non-prepared. We didn't even know what we were doing. I forgot there was a book splode we had to do. It was not a smooth transition back into doing the show, but now we're ready. This coming week, we're going to have a Media Splode. I think we're going to talk about what we enjoyed over the break. We haven't actually discussed it. We haven't recorded it yet. But that's what we did last time. Maybe we'll do it again. I don't know. Week after that will be the book splode that we mentioned last week. Josh and I will be reviewing.
Yes.
And this is tough because it's out of print and it's in several different printings. And so the titles change, but this is the one I have. Classic G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Volume 1. I have the IDW book, which is obviously no longer in print. I've also somewhere got the original Marvel one. The classic G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Volume 1, which covers issues 1 through 10. So that's what we're going to be covering in the Booksplode. If you have those issues, or if you want to, you know, get them on Amazon, or if you want to, you know, I don't even know where they are anymore. I guess they're this image. I don't even know where you'd find them online. But anyway, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Volume 1, which is 1 through 10. That's what we're going to be doing in 2 weeks.
You can figure it out.
Which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
How far into it are you?
I'm on like 7 or 8. I just started reading them on my own for no reason. So I don't know, 7 or 8. I've talked about how I've been enjoying my comics and catching up and reading them, and I have, but I'm a little mad because I just want to be reading G.I. Joe comics. But at the same time, like, you can't read too many of them in a row.
Right.
Like, you want to have them in bites. I think that's how
I really feel like Image has reinvigorated our G.I. Joe love. I mean, that
yes.
press conference that Cobra Commander gave in the last issue of G.I. Joe, Real American Hero was exquisite.
Mm-hmm. You can watch the episodes on Tubi, which is free. There's at least 2 seasons, but it's important to note that the second season of G.I. Joe has something like 64 episodes.
54 animators died that year. In a few weeks, at a date to be determined, we'll have an animated brain trust show reviewing Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1. It'll probably be the first week of February, but I'm not making any promises. We'll find out. We haven't scheduled it yet.
Mm-hmm. That comes back to me. You can find our library of, we should count these. We might be tipping.
No, it's because we're only putting out, you know, 8 a month. So that's still got to.
8 times 50.
I'll tell you how many we at. You talk and I'll tell you.
Over 1,300 shows or more and counting. You see, right now, just as I said this, as you're listening to you, you're like, oh man, that is one more. That's true. You can go to ifanboy.com and find that. You can find whatever else is there. As the
1,345 shows. So this will be 1,346.
Okay, so next year we'll be saying...
Well, no, if we do 6 shows a month, so that's 10... Well, I guess closer to...
All I'm saying is that next year we will be saying it.
Yes, next year will be 1,400. That's true. Yes.
Exactly. But you can find our podcasts in places. I think this works for me because I do it with... But if you go to Apple Podcasts and you write comic books, we still come up pretty, like, first, second. You know, so that... Which I'm very proud of. The day that doesn't happen. I remember when I was no longer the first Josh Flanagan who showed up in Google. That was a bad day, but we're good for iFanboy, it turns out. Yeah, anyway, we are on @IceFanboyComics on Instagram. You'll find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You hear a nice little fun clip from the show when a new episode comes out. That's a thing we do because we care about the new media landscape. Connor and I are on there, Sealskill Patrick and J.A. Flanagan on the Instagram. That's it, though. We're not on the other ones because we don't have time.
And finally, subscribe to this show on youtube.com/ifanboy. You'll find all of our old video shows there, years and years of video shows we did, and we post this show every week. And we may post other shows we do. We haven't decided yet. But basically, if you're someone who's on YouTube all the time and you want to listen there, you can do that. Some people do. A small portion of the listenership does, but that's great. They're important too, those people. So we try to make it easy for them. Please consider leaving a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. We thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. My name is Connor.
And I'm Josh. Did you hear a single cough in this whole episode?
That's because you got a mute button.
I did not use it. I did not. I did not cough. I laughed really hard at one point and almost, but I didn't.
How's your throat?
It hurt yesterday and I was worried I had another virus, but it was gone today. So that's enough.
Same thing happened to me. It's weird. Now we're starting to get sick at the same time, the same stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing if you think about geographically how that doesn't work.
Babe, you say you're traveling on the one after 909. Move over, honey, I'm traveling on that line. I said move over once, move over twice. Baby, don't you be cold as ice. Say you're traveling on the one after nine. Say you're traveling on the one after nine. Say you're traveling on the one after 909.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.